Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we take a critical glance at some topical developments with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this podcast we'll be exploring stories up to Friday the 10th of August. Joining me in this analysis is the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello there, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
Okay, in our first story, Inc.com published a fascinating piece on the 8th of August highlighting US cloud phone company Nextiva's efforts to retain millennials. The piece points out that according to Gallup, millennial turnover costs the US economy almost $30 billion per year. So with that in mind, Nextiva has regimented its charity work into what amounts to a fully fledged subsidiary called Nextiva Cares. In the article's words, quote, "People get their hands dirty. One month it's a dog rescue centre, the next a homeless shelter. In the first half of 2018 alone, nearly 500 employees participated in Nextiva Cares events. The company has seen their young employee base's enthusiasm and company spirit skyrocket," close quote. What are your thoughts on the firm's approach?
I think this is expanding what we understand to be non-financial benefits, or what we've traditionally called them.
Yeah.
This idea that you're getting something that gives you a sense of achievement, that you go home at the end of the day, perhaps tired if there's a physical aspect to the work, you've had a laugh with your colleagues, and your employer really cares about things beyond driving profits, driving performance. I mean, it's so powerful. It makes you wonder why more people aren't doing it. And if you can demonstrate a strong business case, that's half the battle.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies' charity work tends to be a kind of add-on or bolt-on or sort of afterthought, but this is actually turning it into a powerhouse at the centre of the firm.
Yes, it's about the everyday experience. I mean, obviously a lot of companies sponsor sporting teams, and there are benefits, corporate entertaining, etc. But then that's just for the few, whereas this is for everybody in that company can feel that they're contributing to giving something back, making a difference.
Yeah, and it all ties into millennials' passion for wanting something that's larger than themselves or larger than the actual job to plug into while they're at work.
Yes, it's looking for that sense of purpose. And of course, if you know working hard at the day job means that you're going to have more surplus to share for the charity work, there's a motivational effect there as well. And absolutely full credit to them.
Yes, indeed. All right, in our second story, we turn to the subject of self-belief, which for some is an integral personality trait and for others is somewhat more elusive. On the 3rd of August, Hindustan Times political columnist Rajdeep Sardesai penned an engrossing profile of Imran Khan, who is on the verge of becoming Pakistan's next prime minister. Sardesai notes, quote, "Imran was not an instant hit in politics, but he battled on, earning himself political equity for sheer resilience. Indeed, intense self-belief, bordering on self-obsession, has been the core of the Imran persona. It has been marked by a steadfast refusal to give up on his dreams, be it winning the World Cup in 1992, and that was in his previous life as a cricketer, or becoming prime minister," close quote. My questions here are, how can those who are not like Imran nurture themselves into a state of self-belief, and how can they tell when they're veering into overconfidence?
Well, you're often advised, if it's not true, fake it. And I think any of us who've seen people who have that strong self-belief, watch how they behave, check the sorts of phrases they use, and start imitating them. And in a way, you then start becoming what you say you are. I think we all have that problem of identifying the tipping point, when instead of becoming attractive, self-confidence, it becomes hubris. Now, the only way you can really find out if that's happening is if you've got people around you that you are able to take honest and constructive feedback from. So you really need to be referencing what you're doing with people who have seen you grow and develop. You know, we hear about imposter syndrome.
Yes.
But then when there is a degree of success, they start feeling totally and wholly justified to have that role. And I think that's when you start seeing these huge pay rises, because their self-belief has turned from doubting to absolute certainty. And I suppose this is why so many successful executives continue with the help support of a coach.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the message is, just because you believe in yourself doesn't mean that you have to stop listening to other people.
Yes, because of course, as we often say nowadays, you can't be everywhere at once. You have to trust people to represent you, represent the values of the organisation. And they're the people that should provide the check to whether your self-belief is actually stepping into the area of delusion.
Yeah, so it's all about keeping your feet on the ground. Okay, well, next up we're taking a look at sabbaticals, and that's thanks to a 2nd of August interview between online business journal Quartz at Work and Minecraft studio head Helen Chang. In Chang's view, US firms, quote, need more off-ramps from work or opportunities to take a career break, close quote. She adds, quote, half of my Minecraft team is based in Sweden, and I looked at some of these European countries that support a gap year or extended parental leave, and it really gives employees the opportunity to immerse themselves in their life experiences. On my team, someone is about to go on a sabbatical, and I don't look at this as proof that they're any less committed to what we're doing, close quote. With this in mind, how can organisations ensure that they manage staff sabbaticals effectively?
I think the word sabbatical has a gravitas about it. But if you substitute parental or unpaid leave for that, all of a sudden it sounds very, very different. Mm. But all you're actually doing is absenting yourself from the workplace for a specified and planned period of time. And of course, if you're open to that as an employer and are creative in how you use the gap, that will apply to every period of planned absence that any employee wants to take. Mm-hmm. This could do wonders for understanding and acceptance of parental leave if it was just a sabbatical. And if people are coming back from the sabbatical, changed by their life experiences, with energy and enthusiasm and increased loyalty for their employer, then celebrate those stories and try and capture them in some way so mm-hmm. you can evidence that these sabbaticals are a really good idea. If you've had a sabbatical, you're X times more likely to stay with that employer and you're X percent more productive.
Yeah. It seems to me that it's a very healthy pressure valve. Instead of someone sitting at a desk at work dreaming about writing a business book or something like that, they actually get the chance to go off for, say, 4 months and write the business book and then come back. You know, they've got it out of their system and they've probably learned from it. And now they can contribute insights from that project.
Exactly. And I think we hear quite frequently, I was speaking to somebody very recently who changed from being a buyer with a major supermarket chain to a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. Well, the supermarket chain has invested, trained and no doubt lost a great deal with that person. If they had actually said to her, well, have a year off, see how the personal training goes, and there's always space for you when you want to come back. Well, what a great thing for the employer to do. And it's a liberating feeling to feel that you have choice. And to feel less trapped, I think, can be incredibly motivational.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, and finally, the BBC news site published a charming video on the 4th of August sketching out TalkTalk boss Neil MacArthur's efforts to regenerate parts of his hometown Earlham with his own money, as well as buying up empty shops, encouraging public art, rescuing 5 pubs and spending £1 million on a new sports centre. He has helped turn the town's old railway station into a thriving social hub. In MacArthur's view, this is something that any community can do, and he advises, quote, get organised, get your groups together and start planning, close quote. What's your take on MacArthur's passion project?
Well, this is a delightful story. I know Earlham well, and it's just wonderful to think that it's been transformed in this way. Mm. And yes, he has put a lot of money, but when you think of the benefit it's delivered, it could well be within the abilities of groups to get together and raise those sorts of funds to transform public spaces so they look inviting and you're proud to be there. There is nothing more depressing than a row of empty shops.
That's right.
Because it's saying we used to be a lot better and we're no good now.
Mm. So the money is kind of a red herring. What's really at the heart of this is organisation and imagination.
It is. And I think public art as a way of improving derelict public spaces could be a great charity project for a corporate and really enthuse staff to make that sort of local transformation. But I think, as Neil says in his video, it does take planning.
Yeah. Okay, well, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. I will be away next week, so our next podcast will cover stories up to Friday the 24th of August and should be available to listeners on the 27th. Until then, thank you very much for this week's insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you when I return.
Okay, and thanks, Matt.